Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm Nabil Biagio on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news in Sudan and South Sudan this Tuesday, February 6, 2024. The French medical charity Doctors Without Borders is mourning two of its staff killed in the Abyei contested area.
Today we mark the tragic loss of two of our South Sudanese colleagues. They were hardworking, committed humanitarian workers who work to support the community.
And the World Bank donates millions of dollars to support health and agriculture projects in South Sudan.
Whatever we are putting today on the ground in terms of these projects, they are not enough. More need to be done. Better need to be done. Faster need to be done.
We will have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The French medical charity Doctors Without Borders, or MSF, says two of its aid workers were killed following weeks of violence in the contested Abyei area. MSF's head of mission in South Sudan says the group is concerned about the increased level of violence in Abyei. Manyang David Mayar reports from Juba.
Sigrid Lambek, MSF's head of mission in South Sudan, says the group is extremely saddened by the killing of its two South Sudanese aid workers in Abyei.
Today we mark the tragic loss of two of our South Sudanese colleagues. They were hardworking, committed humanitarian workers who work to support the community. They both were working with MSF in Akok when the conflict erupted in 2022. Then later rejoined MSF in Abyei town to keep fulfilling their humanitarian duty. They will be sorely remembered for their good work. They will be missed, and our deepest condolence and thoughts are with the families.
The United Nations Interim Security Force for Abyei said 50 people were killed, including two of its peacekeepers, following a recent wave of fighting in the Abyei administrative area at the end of January. Lambek says MSF is concerned about the step-up violence in the contested region.
We are deeply concerned about the increase of violence that we have been witnessing for the last weeks in the area. Over the last 2 weeks, our team have treated more than 70 patients in Ahmed Beck Hospital in Abyei town, where MSF is providing emergency and life-saving secondary health care. Our medical personnel and equipment are stretched by the number and severity of casualties. MSF stands in its commitment to support the population, ensuring to keep the quality of care high.
Hundreds of humanitarian workers have lost their lives while providing much-needed support to South Sudanese in parts of the country. Deng Ajak, chairperson for the Relief and Rehabilitation Commission in Abyei, confirms two South Sudanese aid workers were killed, but says they were not only ones who lost their lives.
The whole area is under attack. I'm not being specific to target the humanitarian, but it is whoever here in Abyei area is subject to any attack. Many times you have heard about the deputy governor or chief deputy chief administrator and the former minister who has got killed. So we are aware about this situation where some armed rebels. We would like the international community to work very hard so that to stop what is going on in Abyei.
The Troika countries of Norway, the United Kingdom, and the United States have issued a joint statement expressing concerns about the escalation of violence in Abyei and called on South Sudanese political leaders to act with urgency to end the conflict. The disputed Abyei area, claimed by both Sudan and South Sudan, has witnessed clashes in recent years after young men from neighboring Twitch communities in Warabi State have allegedly attacked the Abyei area over boundary issues. For VOA News, Amanyang David Mayer in Juba.
Amid Sudan's nine-month conflict, the medical charity Doctors Without Borders reports one child dies every two hours, in Zamzam displaced people's camp in North Darfur State. Before the conflict, United Nations agencies supported the health system, but aid has halted. MSF's head of emergency response in Sudan, Claire Nicolet, tells me the situation in Zamzam camp is catastrophic, estimating 13 children die every day.
the situation is really deteriorating a lot since last month. So we managed to do this nutritional assessment, and we do also mortality at the same time to try to understand a bit better the situation. So we found that indeed the malnutrition rates are absolutely crazy, meaning that for severe acute malnutrition, we are up to 7 when the it's more than triple the emergency rate, as well for the lactating and pregnant women, absolutely crazy. So we saw that the reality of Zamzam come today is completely catastrophic. Also, mortality is really, really high, really on higher than like 3 times higher as well than the emergency threshold.
I see. And roughly how many people are housed at Zamzam?
Okay, so the numbers of Zamzam has been really changing, and we saw lots of new arrivals recently, especially from the south, Nyala and other cities, which have been really highly targeted and with lots of fighting. So we believe now with the current numbers, we are higher than 300,000, people inside Zamzam camp. So it's really a city. Yeah? It's really completely a city. And that's why we believe as well that we just see the tip of the iceberg of the reality.
And your report mentions that the health system in North Darfur previously was supported by UN agencies and has come to an abrupt stop. Could you elaborate on the effects of this halt on the healthcare services available to displaced people in Zamzam camp?
Yes, Al-Fashi used to be a very important, and North Darfur in general, used to be a very important humanitarian hub. Yes, there were a lot of actors, UN agencies, international NGOs, etc. Unfortunately, when April arrived, almost everybody evacuated, and almost no one stayed. MSF France stayed, and we continue to work as much as possible. But since April, already the needs were crazy, and of course we couldn't manage and respond to all these needs. And really, we are almost alone at the moment to respond. Of course, Ministry of Health is still here, but obviously there is really almost just one hospital. Not almost, one hospital was still working that we are supporting, and then almost no primary healthcare at all. The situation is deteriorating also because food is not coming in, and this is one of the, of course, the main problem of these malnutrition rates.
Yes, and on malnutrition and children specifically, you estimate that about 13 children die each day in Zamzam camp. What steps is MSF taking to address the underlying causes such as severe malnutrition, and what more should be done?
Yes, so the thing is, with this kind of rate, malnutrition rates, and we see that very much with the lactating and pregnant women as well, because it gives you a very good idea about the fact that there is no food or not enough food in the camp, when you see the rates for women as well. So it means that the problem now, we need really massive amount of food arriving to Zamzam camp and to North Darfur in general, because at the moment the food is not available and it's not affordable. So it means that really now, of course, as MSF, we can still continue to try to manage and save lives. But the reality is, if no food is arriving, the situation will deteriorate even more, and there will be the numbers will even triple or quadruple in the coming months.
That's Claire Nicolay, MSF's head of emergency response in Sudan. She spoke with me from the Chadian town of Abéché while on the road to Al-Fashir in North Darfur State. World Bank senior official Ousmane Dione, who is the country director for South Sudan, Eastern and Southern Africa region, has called on the South Sudan government to uphold transparency and commit to realizing stability and development in the country. Dennis Logoyi reports from Juba.
The World Bank has provided $147 million to support projects in the ministries of health and agriculture. The multilateral financial institution says $170 million will fund healthcare projects, while $30 million will go for projects to build resilience in agriculture and livelihoods. The World Bank Country Director for South Sudan and the Eastern and Southern Africa region, Ousmane Dione, called on the government, especially the Minister of Finance and Planning, to be transparent and show a commitment to achieving stability and development in South Sudan.
To our South Sudanese colleagues and friends, to the leadership of South Sudan, and to all South Sudanese people that we are with them in this difficult journey, which they need to reflect better in building peace and stability, which they can reflect better on bringing more transparency and commitment to serve the South Sudanese people who deserve peace, who deserve stability, and who deserve development.
He was speaking during a signing ceremony for the World Bank funding at the Minister of Finance and Planning offices on Monday. Dion reiterated the bank's commitment to supporting South Sudan, but stressed that the government needs to show responsibility and the political will to create a good environment for development projects.
Whatever we are putting today on the ground in terms of these projects, they are not enough. More need to be done. Better need to be done. Faster need to be done for the benefits of all South Sudanese people, wherever they are in this country. And that is the responsibility of every single government. That is the responsibility of development partners to accompany you when you show that commitment, when you show that responsibility, and when you show that political will to make it happen.
Bak Barnaba Chol, South Sudan Minister of Finance and Planning, welcomed the bank's aid and assured accountability in the process of using the funds.
Health and agriculture are so much important for our survival, for our living, for our advancement. As a country, we have prioritized health and agriculture to move our country forward, to safeguard our people from the deteriorating conditions they continue to live in. I promise you transparency and accountability in these funds, and make sure these funds are efficiently managed and effectively allocated as you approve it.
He says South Sudan sees improving health and agriculture as a priority for development.
Now we have reached 1.4 billion in implementing different projects in the country. This is a great help, and it would not have happened without the support of the leadership of the World Bank, represented by Ousmane. So I'm so much thankful, and I will continue to work with the World Bank, to facilitate the World Bank, to facilitate all the projects of all our development partners, from Canada to America to the European Union and all of you. We are so much grateful for the help.
Josephine Joseph Lagu, South Sudan's Minister of Agriculture and Food Security, stresses that insecurity has been the main challenge facing agriculture projects in the country. She adds that with peace prevailing in parts of the country, that helps farmers produce more food to diversify the economy.
We are confident that this country can produce its own food to feed itself and also to export. The country can use agriculture to create jobs. We can use agriculture to ensure that we diversify the economy. We can use agriculture to create and generate revenue for our country and for our people.
However, Akima Ajeth, an economic policy expert at Dr. John Garang University, says agriculture can flourish in South Sudan once farmers are supported to produce food.
This is the right initiative at the right time, although the amount is too small, but I think it will have an impact because we really need to address the issue of food insecurity. A lot of organizations in South Sudan, as you know, they have scaled back their activities in the nation as a result of the war in Ukraine. So there's a need now for government and for multilateral organizations also to shift toward agriculture. And if you shift toward agriculture, this is another way of actually taking the responsibility for putting the citizen with food and stuff and things like that, taking it away to and make people become self-reliant.
The bank's International Development Association is providing $30 million for the Resilient Agriculture and Livelihood Project. Funding for the South Sudan Healthcare Transformation Project will reach about $400 million from the World Bank and other donors to provide basic health services across the country. For VOA News, I'm Dennis Logonyi reporting from Juba.
Listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, we have a guest from Khartoum who just came from Sudan and will shed light on the situation in the country after this break.
Hello, listener of South Sudan in Focus. We have an exciting new segment dubbed Words of Wisdom. We want to hear your thoughtful proverbs that echo through your community. This is another chance for you to share wisdom from your roots. All you need to do is record a proverb in a language of your choice, tell us its English translation and what it means. Keep it brief, authentic, and represent your community. Your recorded proverb shall be sampled on South Sudan in Focus every Wednesday. Send your recording via our WhatsApp number, +1 202 630 8011. That is +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. African football fans are looking forward to Wednesday's semi-final matches at the Africa Cup of Nations tournament in Ivory Coast. Nigeria will play South Africa in the first semi-final in Bouake, Ivory Coast. Ivory Coast will host the Democratic Republic of Congo in the second semifinal in Abidjan. Meanwhile, South Africa's quarterfinal victory over Cape Verde Saturday in a dramatic penalty kick shootout has ignited the country's fans. They're hoping the South African team can replicate the victorious squad of 1996. Myron Naika reports from Durban, South Africa.
South Africans stayed up until the early hours of Sunday, celebrating their team's progress to the semi-finals at AFCON 2023. From Johannesburg to Durban, Pretoria to Cape Town, there is big belief that Bafana Bafana can go all the way.
Williams, wow, you just gave me hope that now we are going to the semi-finals. There is a big possibility when I look at Williams' performances, and I'm like, we're taking this thing home.
I think this Bafana team has pleasantly surprised us all. I think we knew we had a good team, but we didn't know how good they could be. And I think that going on to the international stage and showing that to the African continent and the world is really impressive. Is really proud to be associated with Bafana.
While their euphoria of beating Cape Verde and reaching the semi-finals for the first time in 24 years still lingers, Bafana Bafana's focus is firmly on Nigeria. The Super Eagles will provide a stern test. After losing to Mali in their tournament opener, South Africa have enjoyed an impressive run with positive results against Namibia, Tunisia, Algeria and Cape Verde. Their captain, Ronan Williams, who remarkably saved four penalty kicks, a record at the Nations Cup, shared some insight into their success. Williams says it's been a collective effort, specifically explaining how they masterminded the shootout against the Blue Sharks.
I give credit to the analysts and the goalkeeper coach as well. They sent me so many clips, you know, and my phone is full of penalty clips, so it's credit, you know, to the analyst for doing the work, because it's not easy to get, you know, footage of some of these players, you know, because they're playing all over the world. So, yeah, big ups to the analyst for preparing the clips for me to watch and study. And, you know, they made my job 50% more easier because I had an idea where most of the players were going.
Bafana Bafana have now kept four clean sheets in a row, with Williams setting the tone for a solid foundation at the back. Former national goalkeeper Brian Baloyi hailing Williams' influence at the tournament.
For me, he's by far the best penalty saver I've seen, not only in South Africa, but in Africa, in the world. I know most people maybe on the continent have just saw, or globally just saw now, what he's done with, you know, the last game. But he's done this consistently. He's done it so many times.
On Wednesday, the northern Ivorian town of Boake will stage the semi-final between South Africa and Nigeria. The rivalry between these teams has grown over the years, and with a place in the final at stake, Baloyi believes it has the ingredients for a blockbuster clash.
I would rather play Nigeria than anybody else. And I know in the last few years we've been consistently, you know, playing very well against Nigeria. I know we're playing up there in the north. They're not far from home. They will get a big support. But I think we've done it before. We can do it again. And I believe our boys and the coach have enough in their arsenal to beat Nigeria, to go all the way to the final.
Nigeria and South Africa have met on 15 occasions since 1992. The Super Eagles have won 8, while South Africa just 2. South African defender Grant Kekana shared his thoughts on facing the 3-time champions.
Yeah, obviously it's another tough opponent. We know Nigeria has a lot of quality players. You know, they've done well to also get this far. But we believe in ourselves. We're going to go to the drawing board, you know, plan accordingly, and give ourselves a chance at, you know, getting a positive result against them.
This is a group which has embodied a sense of pride and one that exudes energy wherever they go. Now, will they be able to stop the mighty Super Eagles from flying high? I'm Myron Naika in Durban, South Africa.
The conflict in Sudan between the paramilitary Rapid Support Forces and the Sudan Armed Forces has killed thousands of people. The UN estimates the death toll from the fighting has reached between 13 to 15,000, with 33,000 others injured. When the conflict first broke out in mid-April, it quickly engulfed the capital Khartoum and spread across the country. In response to the unfolding humanitarian crisis, a coalition of activists and ordinary citizens organized what they call emergency rooms, networks to get help to people in need. Joining me live in the studio is Hanin Ahmed from the external office of the Khartoum Emergency Room, currently visiting Washington, D.C. Welcome to Washington, Hanin.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Assalamu alaikum. Hello, everyone who are listening for us.
Thank you for being here. The big question is, what are the emergency rooms?
Okay, the emergency room is a peaceful youth network initiated by the youth on the ground to providing a services in the war zone during these hard times in Sudan, since the war broke out on 15 of April.
What was the need to create them?
The need was the absence of the officials on the ground.
And essentially to respond to the humanitarian disaster.
Of course.
Disaster.
Of course.
And how did you first get involved with the emergency rooms in Khartoum?
On the first day when the war broke out on the 15th of April, on the first day we put an announcement on social media that the lady in the student's house, so they can come to our houses as we can host them. And then we evacuated them on the same day. After we hosted like 50.
Yes, it was targeting women and girls. So it was a feminist.
It wasn't a feminist, but it was a quick response from the ladies and women in the areas, in the different hoods for the other ladies.
Yes, and of course, people who followed the conflict in Sudan, they know homes were invaded. People were not safe inside their homes. So, yeah, so you're providing them shelter?
We actually evacuated them Let me get back to the point that how we evolved in the emergency room. On the second day, we found that it's hard to deal with this, and this conflict will never stop soon. So I came up with the idea in my hood, in my locality, and I called my friends that we have to do a medical room for emergency cases and for injured people. And then we put through our networks on the ground, we put a focal point in each hood. And this is the same. This is what happened in the other six localities in Khartoum and even in Darfur.
You were in Omdurman, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I'm in Omdurman.
And you were one of the founders of the emergency room in your
In Omdurman, in my locality, yeah.
So you provide shelter, you provide medical services. Do you work with volunteers, like professionals?
We are working with our professional networks. We are working with the volunteers. We are working with the resistance committee. We are working with the youth network evolved from Corona, Corona volunteers groups. That they volunteered to provide services and food security at that time in COVID-19. We also providing, as you said, shelter. We have schools, governmental schools, but right now it evolved to evacuation centers. So we have international organizations. They funded us, and then we provide the food security with these funds. We provide the food security. We secure food. We provide the protection. We provide the protection kind of evacuation people from say unsafe to safe places. To
within Khartoum.
Within Khartoum or outside Khartoum even. For example, we evacuated a lady who get raped. And we provided a rape protocol. We provided psychological support, and even we provided job to this lady. So this is a success story. We succeed to open safe corridors to people on the ground. Yeah,
sounds like a great story. And just finally, now you're here in the U.S. What is next? How do you continue doing this humanitarian work?
I would like to send a message to the international community that the humanitarian situation in Sudan is a catastrophic situation. So please give some of your attention to the Sudan and people of Sudan on the ground.
Thank you, Hanin. Thank you for joining me on the show. And that's all we prepared for you this Tuesday, February 6, 2024. Don't forget to check out voaafrica.com for all your favorite programs and news updates. If you missed this broadcast, go to www.voaafrica.com/South Sudan. We now leave you with this song.
Sancho, get them up, my tongue and so on. Coco, my tie, Coco, dented. Man, you come up, get them the back. Busy movie, I say, no, 27 before. My friend is the Bambi Dabungu. So when I
We've been listening to the song Blessed by Eddie Kenzo. I'm your host, Nabil Biagio, in Washington. Thanks for taking the time to be with us. Remember to join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Is the history.